Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, hit it.
Chris Rongi, Amy Marks Kors, The Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called The Show.
Yeah. On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Good morning, friends. It is a Thursday. It is May. Can you believe it?
Oh, my gosh, it is May. Happy
it's May 1st.
May 1st.
Yeah, it's May 1st, dog. So we are well on our way to summer, aren't we?
We are. May is a great month. May is a month of hope and happiness.
It is?
I think so.
Yeah.
Because March is kind of gross, to be honest.
March is the best.
No, it's
oh,
not.
Oh, my birthday's in it. St. Patrick's Day
March
is in it.
Is,
Pie Day is in
people
it.
People think March should be spring.
STL Day is in it.
People think March is spring, but all of a sudden it's just like, it's February, duh.
March is the best. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Rongi, welcome into the show from 9 to noon. Usually, that's when we are on, but today we're off a little early because Cardinals baseball happens again today. 314-436-7900. Drop us a voice message, won't you? You could do that from the Audacy app, AUDACY. We're also streaming live if you want to look at us, and we are very handsome.
We are.
On Facebook, YouTube and Twitter, our account, and you better, I swear to God, you better follow us or I am going to lose it at Chris Amy KMOX.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everyone will be talking about.
Well, so much for breaking Connor Hellebuyck's spirit. The Blues lose game 5 in Winnipeg. They are down 3-2 in what is absolutely a must win tomorrow night at Enterprise Center.
You are correct. And Missouri lawmakers approve a plan to allow homeschool students in the state of Missouri to play sports. We'll see if this moves forward to the governor's desk.
And the U.S. and Ukraine has struck a minerals deal. So what does that mean for the war? We're going to talk to Major Garrett today. He will join the show at 10:25.
But we're on to the next one. Hey, it's a playoff series. I thought that was their best game. I thought it was our worst game. We're on to the next one. I mean, we can analyze every part of it. They were better.
On to the next one. Great Jay-Z song. It really is.
It was the Blues' worst game.
Yeah, it was the Blues' worst game. And I thought, you know, the first couple of games of the series, they were outplayed. But that one last night, that was the worst of the games they were outplayed in. And it looked very, very different from games 3 and 4. So, you know, I was hoping, Amy, like you were, they'd go in and just stick it to Connor. But they didn't. So maybe coming back to Enterprise Center tomorrow will make him nervous again. But the Blues have to win. They absolutely have to win.
Yep. Yeah, it's a must win. See, this is why I said the other games were not a must win.
Let me take this back. It's not a must win. It is a you have to win or you will die.
Yeah.
Which is worse than a must win.
It is. You could argue. You could argue if that's the outcome. So here's the thing. There were a couple moments in last night's game that okay, is this the trajectory-defining moment of the game, or are the Blues going to come back? What's interesting is when the Jets came out of the gate and scored first, I wasn't worried. It was weird. I was actually about to tweet, I'm not worried, but then the Blues scored right away to tie it up.
Yeah,
Well, now it's too late. Now I missed my chance, and I wasn't worried. And I felt like, okay, this is a team that can bounce back, and I thought that was great that they bounced back. I started to get worried. There were two moments, and both involved Oscar Sundquist.
Oh, yeah.
The one was the paddle save on Oscar Sundquist. It was a wide-open net, and Connor Hellebuck, who is a very technical goalie, probably because he studies more than any goalie in the history of the world, but he's a very technical goalie. He doesn't play with swagger. He plays by the book, and he made a swagger save.
Brilliant.
He made a paddle save.
Brilliant.
It was one of those that he was not making in the previous games, and I thought, oh, okay, that's a game changer. And then the embellishment call on Oscar Sundquist.
Yeah, what was he doing, man?
So I actually don't think it was an
embellishment. Like, he took a little bit of an elbow to the face, kind of. But it wasn't like...
He grabbed his face. Yeah. And the thing is, hockey players grab their face, but he really did get tripped up in the skates. It wasn't like he dove. He did get caught up. He did get hit in the face. I thought that was a weak call. I thought in the playoffs, it was an especially weak call. I also thought that the game was called unevenly. Not in the sense that it was for or against the Blues. It just wasn't consistent. I couldn't tell what call was going to be made or not.
Look, embellishment is a penalty. You have to know that as a player. And yeah, maybe he did get caught up, but what they called the embellishment on was like the elbow or the arm or whatever to the face. And he snapped back like he was LeBron, which just don't do that. Because yeah, maybe it's a weak call in the playoffs, and I don't disagree with you there, but don't give them an opportunity. Don't let them call something like that on you because it is completely unnecessary.
Yes, but again, why I'm a little more inclined to give Oscar Sundquist the benefit of the doubt here, there are embellishment calls where you take a slash and you pretend like your arm was cut off or you're tripped and you make it seem dramatic. I will say the elbow pads are tough, right? They're hard. If you take an elbow to the face, your initial reaction is to grab your face, because like whenever you get hit in the nose, in the mouth, you're going to grab your face in a way that looks more dramatic probably than maybe it calls for. Yeah, it could go either way. And like I said, some people were complaining about the refs, and I don't think they were calling for or against either team. It just felt, I was a little surprised what they did and didn't call. There were some calls, Bolduc got hit where the sun don't shine. He got speared, and it really was a spear. When you saw the replay, you're like, holy cow. And you can see how you would miss that. But there were also cross checks that the refs missed on both sides. On both sides. It was not favoring one team. But I think at the end of the day, the Blues did not look good. Their offense looked pretty bad. They looked just sclerotic in the neutral zone. They couldn't get anything going. That's what Winnipeg does, is they shut you down. They don't let you get speed in the neutral zone. And then they had bad turnovers, and they were putting the defense in a bad position. Jordan Binnington, outstanding.
They had one power play without a shot.
Yeah.
That you can't do that.
Jordan Binnington, you know, stood on his head. He was outstanding. The offense did not look good. And they will have to be better in this next game. They're not going to win if they look like they looked last night.
Oh, absolutely not. And that's sort of what they did last night, was what I was afraid of going into the series. I kind of thought Winnipeg might look like that every night against them. And, you know, Blues rebounded at home. So I guess we have to hope that the home crowd is enough to get it done, right?
Well, the home team's won every game so far.
It is. Look, that's true. Look, it is... it's on you, Blues fans. If they don't win tomorrow night, your fault.
Well, obviously.
Your fault.
So, bring it. You need to bring it. But I will say this. I'm looking ahead. You shouldn't look ahead. It's stupid. However, even though the home team has won every game in this series, Jordan Binnington in game sevens. Mm-hmm. Nails.
This is what I'd say.
Love that guy.
How much would you bet right now?
Not a million dollars.
How much would you bet that the only road team to win this series will be Game 7? If you had to put money on it right now.
The only road team to win this series?
To win in this series would be Game 7.
Yeah, well, we'll
how much would you bet? How much would you bet right now? I'm asking you now.
$4.
$4.
But I feel very strongly about it.
That there is going to be one road win, mm-hmm. and it will be Game 7 in Winnipeg.
Yes.
All right, $4.
Who do I pay?
Me.
You?
Yeah.
Do you pay me?
Yes. If it happens, I pay you. If it doesn't happen, you pay me. So either way, I win.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, either way, I win. So either I get the Blues winning Game 7 to advance, I win $4.
Sports betting is never going to make it in Missouri if it's this confusing.
I'm not confused at all. I'm taking advantage of you. I absolutely understand what's going on.
Okay.
So, Game 6, and you know how I love a Game 6.
This guy loves game sixes more than he likes games sevens.
Yeah, everybody thinks I'm stupid for this, and that's fine. You can disagree with me, but here's my reasoning for loving game six, for anybody who's not heard it before. I love the uncertainty of not knowing if that's the last game or not. I love that. So I love going into game six knowing, okay, this might be the Blues' last game of the season, or there might be at least one more. We don't know yet.
But you know, Game 7 also has that because you're prepared.
You're prepared. You know for a fact that somebody's out after that night.
Okay,
This is either the series goes on or it's over tonight. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's something about a Game 6 I just love. And it always seems like a lot of the really cool stuff happens in Game 6.
Would you feel that way if David Fries never existed?
Yeah, totally.
What Game 6 do you go to other than David Fries?
Michael Jordan in Utah.
Was that his flu game?
No, that was not the flu game. That was not the pizza, the food poisoning. That was he hit the shot, the final shot with the Bulls to win a title. Wow. Game 6 in Utah.
Game 6 in Utah. Okay, yep. So here's the thing. You know our text number because you know we love to hear from you.
Yep.
314-436-7900. Call or text. You can also leave us a voice message on the Odyssey app. It can be about the Blues. It can be about game sixes.
Yep.
It can be about any of that. It can also be about what we're going to talk about next, which is Missouri lawmakers approving a plan to allow homeschoolers play in school sports in their respective public schools. It hasn't passed yet. But the lawmakers approved it. It might reach Governor Kehoe's desk. That's kind of interesting, too, if you have kids in that that age group, if you have kids who have been homeschooled, know homeschool students, and whether or not they should play on the public school team. So we're going to be asking your opinions on that as well. But, yeah, do you like Game 6 more than Game 7?
No one's going to agree with me on this. I am on an island all by myself, and I am perfectly comfortable with this.
What if you showed up on that island? It was a real island, and the only other guy on that island was David Fries.
Well, I would say, sorry you're not in the Cardinals Hall of Fame, but that wasn't on me.
No.
I just want you to know that. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji, feel free to text us 314-436-7900 or call in. You could do that. And voice messages, record one and send it straight from the Odyssey app.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
What's today?
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
Well, we asked for your feedback regarding Ranj's controversial take that a Game 6 is better than a Game 7. And Bill, who is watching on the YouTube, said, Chris and Amy, one word about Game 6s. David Fries.
That's two words. It's not one word. We appreciate it, Bill.
Yeah.
I got two words for you. Steve Nash and Chris Paul. Must see TV. That's more than two words.
You didn't say two words. You said quick to the point.
You just said I got two words. Steve Nash and Chris Paul must see.
That's why I messed up, because I was trying to think of two words. I could have said that. Okay.
Two words.
Nash and Paul.
That's three words.
Three words. Wait, I said Nash and
Paul. I got one.
Bill is Charles Barkley. That's so good. I got two words for you. Nash and Paul. Steve Nash and Chris Paul.
Must see TV.
That's like eight words.
Multiple sentences.
Oh, that's the best. NBA, thank you, Bill, for listening.
Thank you, Bill.
And for watching us on YouTube.
The NBA on TNT.
This is the best.
So good.
Thankfully, it's moving over to ESPN when they go there. Because
I thought Charles Barkley was not going. I thought that was the whole thing.
No, the whole plan is for the whole show to go.
What was the whole? I'm not doing anything but TNT.
I don't know. That's just
Bill gave us a thumbs up because he's a good sport.
Yeah, Bill is a great sport.
Thank you, Bill.
Just count your words first, Bill.
No, don't count them because I think that was hilarious.
It was delightful.
It was delightful. Okay, we also want to hear from you, 314-436-7900. This one hits close to home for me, and I know it is relevant to a lot of families out there. So there is a piece of legislation moving through Jefferson City that would allow homeschool students to play sports for their respective public schools. Now, growing up, and I homeschooled back in the pioneer days of homeschooling when people had never heard of it. I mean, now everyone's heard of homeschooling, but people had never heard of it. Most of the time when I said I homeschooled, people would say, "Where's that?" or "What's that?" So we in Missouri were not allowed to play sports for our local public schools. In Florida, they are. It's usually called the Tim Tebow law because he was homeschooled. I guess football is king, so they allowed him to play football for his public school. So
if I'm not mistaken, there are over 30 states that allow it, right?
You know, that I don't know. I don't know how many states. I just know Missouri doesn't allow it. And it's gotten more popular. The last census showed that 11% of households have at least one homeschooled student in that household, 11% of households with school-aged children. So this plan is sponsored by Missouri Senator Ben Brown. It was approved in the House Wednesday, 91-53. The vote, it's going to head back to the Senate for a final vote. And there was a similar bill last year that fell short of passage, but this is on its way to Mike Kehoe's desk. And I think this makes sense to me. Homeschooling costs taxpayers $0. The taxpayer doesn't pay anything for a parent who decides to homeschool their children. Homeschool parents still pay the taxes to the public schools, right? Like whatever your school district is, you're paying those taxes. And they have formed, it's funny, when I homeschooled, we were known for being really smart and not good at sports. We were just kind of, you know, like not the athletic type. For me, not having high school sports didn't impact me because in high school, I played ice hockey and there were no high school girls ice hockey teams anyway. So I just played club hockey, which is what all the other high school girls were playing. But I had friends who homeschooled and then in their senior year or the last part of their senior year would go to Lafayette or Marquette so that they could play baseball and be seen by scouts or football or whatever it may be. And so I do think this offers a great option, and I don't know what the downside is. I saw some of the pushback in the article from Jeff Knight, who said he's worried about the quality of education that some homeschoolers are receiving and said they need to take at least one class per day to make sure the kids are getting educated. Representative Kathy Steinhoff, who I really respect, is a former teacher. She said it's flawed because homeschool students wouldn't have to keep their grades high in order to participate in activities like traditional students. And I just had to say those arguments, they're irrelevant or they're ignorant of the facts, which is that homeschool students overwhelmingly perform higher than public school and traditionally school students on every metric, whether it's standardized tests, high school, elementary standardized tests, ACT, SAT, and even Harvard. A Harvard study just came out and showed that homeschool students perform better emotionally, psychologically, and socially. homeschool students are doing okay when it comes to education.
Yeah, this is, if we can have a completely different conversation about academics and homeschooling, what I know is that it's just not possible for everybody to do it, or even most people to do it. And most people aren't even considering homeschooling their kids. So that's a completely different discussion. When it comes to the sports, though, the side I would take on this is, what about the kids who do go to the school and maybe a roster spot? They don't make a team because a homeschool kid made a team.
Be better? I mean, it's just No.
This is amateur sports. That kid goes to the school. They go to class at that school. They have lunch at that school. They participate in school activities. They should have the opportunity to play over somebody who does not go to that school. And the way I would see it, and I know you were homeschooled, but forget that you were, this isn't a personal thing. I just see it like, if the school's not good enough for your kid to go to it, then it shouldn't be good enough for him to get to play a sport there.
So you're the first person that's made that argument, and I would listen to that argument. I would. I think there's more validity, because we have another message, and thank you, from Millie on the YouTube. It said the downside is you'd have two different academic standards. And I'd say, yeah, it's a lot higher for homeschoolers. Homeschoolers score on average 15 to 25 percentage points higher.
Sure.
I mean, we have less than half of the kids in this country that go to public school can read at grade level. It's 13% in the city of St. Louis. Homeschool students have a much higher overall academic
standard.
But
also, as a homeschooler, you have more flexibility in your schedule throughout the day, right?
So I just think your argument that you made,
yeah,
that's the first person I've seen make that argument, and that's an argument I'd listen to.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. We know prescription drug costs way too high, and this is something that affects almost everybody in the United States. And there are a number of pharmacists that are at Capitol Hill this week, gathering there in order to try and lobby and bring attention to the fact that it is so expensive. We're going to talk to Doug Hoey, who is the CEO of the National Community Pharmacists Association, about drug costs and this effort to try and bring them down. That is next on KMOX. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji on KMOX 104.1 FM. And it is time to go to the guest line this morning. As we mentioned going into break, we all know that drug costs are through the roof. And for a lot of people who cannot afford them, something needs to be done in that area. And there are hundreds of pharmacists from around the country on Capitol Hill to meet with members of Congress to lobby to do something about it. To discuss it with us is the CEO of the National Community Pharmacists Association, Doug Hoey, with us on KMOX. Doug, we appreciate your time today. Thank you for visiting with us.
Yeah, thanks for the chance to talk with you about the independent pharmacies and the high cost of drugs and how we can keep them lower.
Yeah, so how can we keep them lower, and what is your path to doing so?
So everyone knows drug costs are going up, and you know, the United States pays the most in the world, but far and away. And one of the things, one of the features of the United States healthcare system that virtually no other country in the world has, and those other countries pay lower drug costs, are these middlemen called pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs. And in St. Louis, there's actually the biggest, the largest PBM in the entire country is in your backyard in St. Louis. It's called Express Scripts.
Yep.
And these PBMs are owned by insurance companies. Express Scripts is owned by Cigna. And they have a motivation that the higher the cost of the drug goes up, the more money they make. And so what we're advocating here on Capitol Hill, here in Washington, D.C., and there's a number of pharmacists from Missouri who are here adding to the national voice, is to say, look, we don't need this role of these middlemen who are just adding costs to the cost of prescription drugs. We need to, they can have a role, but it should be an appropriate role. And we need to pay the pharmacies a flat fee, just a flat fee above what it costs them to buy the drug, and nothing more. And it's really simple. It's a simple, transparent, predictable model. And we've got some good traction. There's a lot of interest in Washington, D.C., especially with, there's a lot, with DOGE coming in for government efficiency and trying to cut out government waste and, give the taxpayers a better deal. We're getting a lot of interest from legislators to look at this more transparent system that eliminates the big role of the middleman.
Doug, correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding about the PBMs is there are some like national pharmacies, like CVS, for example, that also operate as PBMs. And there, isn't there some effort to limit that, to say either you get to be a pharmacy or you get to be a PBM, you can't be both? Isn't there something going on in that regard?
There is. They're actually big news for our industry. So just, south of Missouri and Arkansas. Arkansas passed a state law just signed by Governor Huckabee Sanders into law maybe 2 weeks ago, so very recently, that would say this conflict of interest, because we say it as a conflict of interest, and so did the state of Arkansas, that for these big insurance PBMs to also own pharmacies, and you gave a great example of CVS. CVS owns brick-and-mortar pharmacies, but then they also own these PBMs. They also own the insurance company Aetna. So when you have one person owning the insurance company, the prescription drug manager, and the pharmacy, it creates this conflict of interest. And what was happening, or what is happening, is that the big insurance companies, Aetna or Caremark's the name of the PBM, would say, hey, we can make more money if we steer patients who are enrolled with Aetna or enrolled with Caremark into our CVS pharmacies. And in Arkansas, they said, look, we're paying more money as a state. We're not going to put up with that. It's hurting our pharmacies, too. It's causing pharmacies to close. Mm-hmm. In the last 5 or 6 years, the country has lost 10% of all the pharmacies in the country have closed, not just independents, but independents and chains. So Arkansas is kind of the tip of the spear. They're the, one down, 49 to go, of saying this conflict of interest is not good for taxpayers. It's not good for citizens. You got to be one or the other. Pick your choice, but you can't serve two masters. You've got to be one or the other. Express Scripts has a big mail order pharmacy, so they don't have brick and mortar stores like the CVS pharmacies, but they have an enormous mail order pharmacy that also presents that conflict of interest.
This is kind of a 101, almost a dumb question, but why do we need pharmacy benefits managers in the first place?
It's really not a dumb question at all. And I know that's like a reflex thing to say when someone says it's a dumb question. It really is not, because the whole system is intentionally complex. It's very difficult to track where the dollars are going. So why do we need PBMs? Why did they start in the first place? Well, they started about 30 or 40 years ago, and they actually served a good purpose. Back then, patients would buy a prescription drug, and then they'd have to, it was called the shoebox effect. People would throw the receipt in a shoebox, and then at the end of the year, tax year, they'd take those receipts out of the shoebox and try to get repaid for them. And what the PBMs helped do, again, 40 years ago, was to make that an electronic process. And in fact, pharmacies were one of the first healthcare providers where the transaction was electronic. And so in the late 80s and early 90s, a patient could come into the pharmacy, and let's just say their copay was $10. The patient would pay the $10. And then the pharmacy, let's just say the drug cost the pharmacy $50, patient would pay $10, the pharmacy would get paid back $40, because remember the drug cost them $50, and then the pharmacy would get maybe a $7 or $8 dispensing fee, 40 years ago. So it was really simple, and it made it easy for the patient. They didn't have to file these receipts, go through all the paperwork. So it really was a good service. But what's happened over time is that these PBMs have merged and consolidated. And so now three of the PBMs, including Express Scripts, is one of them. Caremark, the CVS one, is the other. And then United Health, of course, has a PBM. Just those three PBMs control 80% of all the prescription traffic in the United States. And so they've gotten too big to fail. And so it used to be that the drug manufacturers that they were the ones kind of raising the prices and causing things to become so expensive. But that's changed in the last 5 or 10 years. The PBMs have gotten so big and so powerful that they call the shots. They can say to the drug manufacturer, look, we're not going to pay for your drug, which means patients can't get your drug unless you give us some rebates. You give us some payola to include your drug on our formulary. Otherwise, the patient can't get it. So the PBM has morphed from this, hey, this nice, good bread and butter service to kind of this dragon with fangs that is controlling where patients can get their medication, how much they pay, and which drugs they get. The PBMs sometimes overrule physicians and often overrule pharmacists on which drugs patients can get. So it's kind of the, you know, a nice little puppy that, you know, grew up to be a pit bull.
And to that point, I think you described it with them throwing their weight around. But who said, okay, we'll let the PBM decide that I can't get this doctor-recommended procedure, or I should say medicine. I can't get this doctor-recommended medicine. Who said okay to that, allowing them to be the highest tribunal?
Yeah, sort of the judge, the jury, and the executioner is. Yeah, it's really our healthcare system has allowed that. So, I mean, technically, I'm sure if you had a PBM on, they'd say, oh, that's not true. A patient can get the medication that their physician prescribed. So technically, that probably is true. But what they don't say is that, but we're not going to cover it.
Right.
So the patient's left, you know, let's just say their benefit makes that $1,000 drug be a $100 drug. Of course, the patient's paying monthly premiums to help offset that. But if they don't use their insurance or if the drug's not covered, let's just say they have to pay the entire $1,000. So, yes, it's technically a choice, but it's not much of a choice because the patient has to pay the full brunt or the majority of the cost of the drug. And our healthcare system has allowed that. The structure of our the benefit design, how the healthcare benefit is designed. You've got the PBMs. Again, the higher the cost of a drug, the bigger rebate, the more money they're able to extract out of a manufacturer. So at one point, they were interested in keeping dollars low, the cost of drugs low. But now, the higher the better. And that trickles down, of course, to higher healthcare premiums, health insurance premiums, higher costs at the counter. And also, it's the economic environment for the pharmacies. You think, oh, well, at least the pharmacies are making some money out of this. They're not at all. Pharmacies are closing left and right. Like I said, 6,000 pharmacies have closed, have contracted. There's 6,000 fewer pharmacies in the United States today than there were just 7 years ago.
So people are listening to this and they're wondering, okay, what's being done to lower costs for us? Is it going to happen? You said earlier that it seems like there's a bipartisan interest in getting something done here. So what's the real likelihood and how does it happen?
We think there's a high likelihood. I will say there's been actually some frustration on from our pharmacy lens because the PBM legislation that would reform some of their business practices to make it, again, we're interested in transparency for the patient, simplicity for the patient, and predictability for the patient and for the pharmacy and how much they pay and how much the pharmacy gets paid. That's what legislation that we support, our organization, we represent the pharmacy owners in the United States, 19,000 independent pharmacies across the country. That's what this legislation would do. And it's, you know, the Washington, D.C. environment is, you know, no surprise to anyone if they're reading or listening to the radio or reading news, highly polarized. However, PBM reform is highly bipartisan. It's passed committees, like, you know, committees 26-0, almost unanimously. What's holding it up, though, is, oh, I should also, this is important. It would save taxpayers, this PBM legislation would save taxpayers $5 billion. $5 billion savings. So it's good for patients. We think it would be good for pharmacies too. What's holding it up is the somewhat the toxic environment in Washington. Yeah. So because it saves money, it's a question of in what package does it get put into. Right now, there's a big budget bill that's being worked on in the House, and we're told it'll be included in that. We've been told it would be included in the bills that were needed to fund the government that were passed in December and then passed again in March. It's been frustrating from our standpoint because, hey, this saves $5 billion, and who couldn't use a $5 billion savings? We're told, though, by House Majority Leader, Speaker of the House, Johnson, and then Senate Majority Leader John Thune, that it's going to pass. It'll be in reconciliation. We're just very anxious. Our pharmacy owners and the patients we serve, you know, every day a pharmacy is going out of business because of the PBMs. And so every day they wait, it's one more pharmacy, one more small business that closes, and one more community that loses access to its local pharmacy. So we're antsy. We're ready for Congress to do its job.
And people are antsy to bring drug costs down, because that's the most important thing, is what people have to pay for the medicine they need. And for a lot of people, a lot of that stuff is unaffordable. So they are absolutely the most important part here. Doug Hoy, we appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Doug is the CEO of the National Community Pharmacists Association, joining us on 104.1 FM KMOX. Hey, some breaking news, Amy.
Oh.
CBS News is reporting that the National Security Advisor, Mike Waltz, and Alex Wong, his deputy, are leaving their posts.
Oh,
I'm assuming this is after the Signalgate stuff. So the signal chats, and I guess that's the person who's falling on the sword, or the people.
Wow. Well, I guess maybe Pete Hegseth is closer to doing what Trump wants him to do, which is get it together.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. Did you see this next?
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Hey, Ranj, did you know it's National Password Day?
It is?
Yeah, that's it. I have nothing else to say on that point other than it's National Password Day.
Do I need to change mine?
I don't think so. I think this is one of those where there's no action needed from you.
Oh.
We're just celebrating.
Great. So I'm not getting the email that says change your password in 5 days, now in 4 days, in three, and then you get the countdown.
Countdown.
Then you're locked out.
Yeah. Nope. It's just everybody congratulate themselves on their passwords.
Why does everything have to have a password?
Too many
passwords.
There's a meme where a hacker says, hey, I have all your passwords. And the person who got hacked said, awesome, what are they? I need them.
That's awesome. Amy, have you heard about sperm racing?
Unfortunately, I have.
So last week in Los Angeles, the first ever sperm race was held.
Can you give us more details on how exactly?
So it was an event to raise awareness for declining male fertility.
Okay.
And so they had this whole event in front of a crowd, and they had a number of young men participating in it.
Oh, gross!
Well, they donated ahead of time.
Okay.
They don't do it in front of the crowd. They did it beforehand. So then the sperm are placed under a microscope.
Yep.
And it's magnified 100 times and then shown on the video screen, and they go through basically a course. It's a race course.
Yeah.
And the winner of the sperm got $10,000.
And baby.
It was a 20-year-old student from USC named Tristan Milker, which is it's either unfortunate or perfect name for the winner of the sperm race.
You know how they say baseball is a game of failure, right?
Yeah.
Like you're just not as much as sperm. Most of those guys don't make it.
Well,
there's like a bazillion of
them. Yeah, of course. Of course.
And sometimes none of them make it.
So in reality,
what's wrong?
All of us, everybody on Earth has won a race at least once.
That's right. That's right? A good way to put it.
And
may have lost our Alabama tickets contest, but you won the sperm race.
You didn't have a name yet, but you won a race.
Yeah.
How about that? So in order to prepare, Tristan Milker.
I feel like it's unfortunate.
He gave up alcohol.
Uh-huh.
He exercised regularly and slept 8 hours a day ahead of his matchup.
I wonder if he stopped riding bikes. I've heard that that's a... All I know is...
Really?
I had a friend who was a triathlete and he had a bunch of bikes. They're so weird. They're way weirder than runners. And they had trouble having kids, but then they did have like boom, 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 four kids. And he made his wife apologize to his bikes.
Wow. Actually, I kind of appreciate that.
He's like, go outside and say you're sorry.
It is the Chris and Amy show. We're going to be giving away tickets to see Alabama before the show is over at 10:40 today. We're done at 10:40 because the Cardinals pregame show is right after that. And you're going to get to listen in to Cardinals baseball again today. By the way, Kevin in Manchester or from Manchester on his way to Chicago listening to the show says, happy May 1st. That means it is only 4 more days until Cinco de Mayo. That's what it's called in St. Louis now because we're just a city of sinkholes.
What day is
May 5th?
What day is May 5th? It's a Monday.
Is it this Monday coming up?
Yes.
Yep.
We'll be at the Billikens Golf Classic.
That is correct.
Anyway, I was going to say, maybe wouldn't it be nice if we broadcasted next to a sinkhole?
Maybe we'll broadcast over one and we'll fall into it. Amy Marks Corps, Chris Ranji. When we come back, voice of the Cardinals, John Rooney, joins the show on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.